So, what are we going to do? Well, we're going to give you some practical tips within a process for agreeing compensation events so that they're agreed more quickly, amicably, and accurately for less hassle than traditional contracts. So, at a personal level, does less hassle appeal to you? Yeah. Okay. People like an easy life. Yeah. For the employers to get better or more work for less, so when change does occur, we're not paying through the nose through it. Employers in the room, like the sound of that? Yeah. And contractors get more profit, like the sound of that? Yeah. Okay. Nice to see some audience participation over there with the nodding heads. They might be nodding slightly different later on, but hey, we made a good start. So, what am I going to do? Talk a very little bit about me and built intelligence, give an overview of the compensation process as defined in the contract, the process and the tips, the main event, and then reflection and takeouts, which is partly what have you learned, but also some takeouts and freebies from built intelligence. So, very little bit about me. I am a genuine NEC geek. I've been involved in its development for 20 plus years when I started under one of its co-instigators doing a PhD on its practical application. My contributions are acknowledged in the full engineering construction contract with other members of the contracts and procurement SIG of the Association for Project Management. And I could have said specific interest group as well, but that's even more of a mouthful. We led the development of the professional services short contract. I've also authored a book on it, which people still say nice things about, and co-authored Built Intelligence's online academy on NEC. So very briefly about Built Intelligence, what the hell do we do? We're consultancy done differently. Remote consultancy in terms of e-learning, question and answer databases from experts, and we're developing some tools and widgets, some of which the simpler ones are downloadable, often free, from our website. That's enough. I'll show you a little bit at the end so that you know, if you're going to get them for freebie, what you're getting. So, what is the compensation event process? So, let's see if this has got a little pointer. Yes, it has. So, mentioned in the previous talk was this thing called the early warning process. The early warning process is a management process, a simple management process embedded in the contract where if I have a problem, I have to tell the other party. So if I have a problem, which in non-contractual speak affects time, cost or quality, I notify the other party. We then have a meeting. It doesn't say how formal that meeting could be. And then we have to come away with actions in order to resolve it or minimise the impact. So an early warning is a management process and nothing to do with contractual risk allocation. But some of those early warnings, if they are owned by the employer under the risk allocation under the contract, will become compensation events. Okay? So there is a list in one place of the contract of all the core compensation events. And in the engineering construction contract, the big beast of the family, there's 19 of them. So, the contractor has a maximum time to notify most of them. The project manager has 1 week to get back to them, but some of them, the project manager should notify them straight to the contractor at the time. And if the project manager should notify them at the time, the contractor isn't time barred, whereas the ones he should notify are. The project manager says, yes, it is a compensation event, give me a quotation, and I'm simplifying massively here. And the contractor then has 3 weeks to give the contractor a quotation, and the project manager has 2 weeks maximum to respond. And in an ideal world, it's accepted first time. However, when I was doing my research, about 70% went back this way. Yeah, so the contractor said, here's my quotation, and the project manager disagreed with something about it. They therefore then had a chat, and it went that way, and then was accepted a second time round. On some of the projects that I looked at years ago when I was doing my research, 80% were accepted first time. And there was some pretty distinctive things that they were doing to get that 80% acceptance first time. And if your compensation events are being accepted rapidly, promptly, etc., then you have a rolling final account, which means with reference to Ian Heafey's previous talk under target cost contracts, you have control of where the project's going, or you're at least influencing it, and you get an agreed final account at the end or close to the end. So this talk really is about what did those organisations, and I do stress organisations, plural, do together to get that rapid agreement where the employer thought, I'm getting a good deal, the contractor said, I'm getting more profit. Okay, and knowing where the project's going, getting better value, all that sort of stuff. Okay, I won't talk about these ones, but the project, it looks as if I am. The project manager can basically say, get fed up with the contractor and say, I am going to assess compensation events, this is what you're getting. And also he can ask for proposed instructions and not have to put them in effect. The rest of this talk is actually about this bit and doing it in a week rather than in 5 weeks. It's not about contractually going round and round in there. So, a bit more. Why pre-assess? Well, for the employer, you know what you will pay, rather than waiting until the work's done, or even worse, waiting until the whole of the project is done, yeah. Okay. For the contractor to pre-price accurately, you have to give the contractor good quality information on which to price. If they can pre-price it and know what they've got to do, then they can program efficiently. Do you think it costs less money to program efficiently and work efficiently than if you're not doing that? Thank you for that audience participation again. Right, okay. Now, I'll say this numerous times, the biggest complaint from contractors, and it still is a valid one, is we're just expected to solve the problem and come up with a quotation by guessing what it is the project manager wants us to do without being given clear direction. So then we go off and we do all the other work, and then, that's not what I wanted. Yeah? So, there's already a tip there. The rolling final account leads to an agreed final account on completion, and less man-hours, effort, and acrimony versus agreeing a claim at the end, because you're doing it, because let's face it, if you're trying to agree all of this at the end, you've got missing, inadequate records, people have moved on, you've got naturally synthetic memories? And by that, I mean that every time you recall a bit of information in a context, you merge it, tweak it with the context in which you recall it. So naturally, with the best will in the world, memories diverge. Yeah, and there's a thing called optimism bias. They diverge towards what you want it to diverge to. Yep, and that can be diametrically opposite. So actually agreeing these things as the project goes along saves a lot of man-hours and actually allows you hopefully to focus on managing it rather than just administering a big claim at the end. So, I will actively ask for employer. How many employers in the room? As in people from the employers? Only two? Only one? Hands up. Oh, some over there. Do you want this? Can I hear a yo? Yo. Sort of. All right. For the contractor. Oops, wrong one. You know what you will receive. Contractors, you only make 1% or 2% profit. Is knowing what you're going to receive an important part of the equation? Yeah, okay. As soon as, under options A and B, the price-based contracts, as soon as it's been agreed, as in an implemented compensation event, and the work has been done, you will then get paid for it. So the vast majority of contractors, when I was doing my research all those years ago, all said, to some degree, we've got better cash flow than under traditional contracts because we get paid sooner for the extras, basically. Ability and incentive to work efficiently. They also said, those who characteristically managed to pre-assess also said, we generally work more efficiently on the extras rather than bumbled our way through them. Now, you can say as an employer, that's giving away profit to the contractor. But it's also not having arguments over disruption, which my experience of both working for employers and contractors is neither party ends up happy. Neither the contractor doesn't think they get paid enough, the employer thinks they've paid over the top. Well, if you can work efficiently, you'd avoid disruption. And then the same two at the end. So for contractors, and I'm judging these gentlemen, are you contractors? You're nodding? You're nodding your heads? Yep, okay. They seem to want that as well. So, are we all, apart from claims consultants, are we all, do we all want this? Yeah, okay, right. So, what are the prerequisites? Well, I put this slide in, and I could talk for about a quarter of an hour, 20 minutes on it, but I'm not going to. Essentially, a prerequisite is that people are talking to each other. And a prerequisite of that is that communication lines are open, both through actually informal dialogue or getting to know the person, but also if you're based at other ends of the country, etc., it's kind of hard to have those informal conversations. It's kind of hard, for instance, to pop into your, if you're a quantity surveyor, your opposing number's office and go, can you just give me a bit of verification on that cost? Oh, yes, here's the folder. Yeah? Okay. It's, oh, I've got to find it, PDF it, et cetera, all that sort of stuff. So essentially, people are talking and they're free to talk. The admin systems, et cetera, are all in place to make it easy to do so that people can focus on managing the situation rather than administrating it. Okay. The other prerequisite, which isn't in here, is a good program is in place. Because essentially under the NEC, how compensation events are assessed in simple terms is, in contractual terms, it's the change in defined cost plus fee due to the compensation. Where do defined costs come from? Well, use of resources. Yeah. Where do use of resources come from? Well, the program. So how do you know what the change in defined cost is? Well, you've got to know what the change in resources, change in method. Where's all that? It's in the program. And the NEC, as part of its stimulus to good project management, has a much greater emphasis on programming, partly to manage events, but partly it's the foundation for assessing compensation events. Okay? And I would argue under traditional contracts, one of the reasons why you have so much argument is because they're really quite fluffy about what the program has to show. And therefore you don't, and updating it and so on. And the NEC is very specific, and it's specific about how frequently it's updated, etc. So that rolling base on which to evaluate compensation events is in place. So given that, what's the overview of the process? Well, it's that. So I'm not going to talk about that because I've got more specific ones, slides on each of those bullet points. I'll talk about the specifics and then we'll look back at it. But I promise you, when we get to the end and I say, is that rocket science or common sense? You'll probably go, it's common sense actually, but it does take two to tango. Okay? I've stressed organisations, etc. It does take two parties to do it. Now that's a change in mindset as well. So, what's the cause? Identify under what heading, compensation event heading it falls. So this, you could say, is good contract administration. NEC has 19 core compensation events and other ones. You have these cloud-based systems which help you administrate it. Often, they allow you to go back a stage further. So if it's a change to the works information, a change to the spec, the drawings, etc., you can actually tick, who does it originate from? Well, it's the employer changing their mind, or the designer's not done a good enough job, etc., things like that. So you can go back and say, what's the real cause of it? Separating out the design changes, etc. I would then say, look at the do-nothing consequences, because it could be, it's a two-week delay. Oh, hang on. When we look at the program, there's 3 weeks free float to absorb it. Yeah? So that leads then into how are we going to manage it? Well, actually, all we're going to do is make sure it doesn't get onto the critical path. Yeah? And we can go for a least cost direct solution. On the other hand, it's a two-week delay. It's on the critical path. It's a £1,000 technical problem, and the costs of site costs are £5,000 a day. Well, what's the nature of the solution going to be? Throw money at it, basically, to solve it. So just what are the do-nothing consequences gives an insight into what are you going to do about it. Okay? Is it And related to that is knowing what the project objectives are. You know, is it a time-dominated project? Has it got a fixed deadline? Or is it least cost? What's the cost per day? People having an awareness of those things mean the background context means that they can come up with solutions which are fit for purpose. If they don't know the purpose, if you like, the objectives, they're not going to do that. So, the outcome and the constraints. This goes back to what I was saying about the biggest complaint from contractors. There's a quote from John Rayner, who does a lot of work for London Underground, and a contractor came up to him and he said something along the lines of, do you know, the problem that we have with you is you don't give us clear direction on what you want, and when we guess what we want, it's somehow our fault that we don't know what you don't want when you don't even know what you want. Yeah? But we're at fault, right? It was the most common complaint from contractors. And I know when I was on site, I experienced it. Solve it. No, you, with benefit of hindsight, you've done it wrong. Yeah? So get clear about what it is that you want instead. So is it lease time? Yeah? Clear description of what the end state, if it's a change, there's a technical problem outside, what do you want instead? Give me a clear description. Let's sit down and agree that. Before I go off, ignoring the rest of this, before I go off and work up a detailed quotation, let's get clear about that. Okay? It sounds obvious, but that's the most common complaint. And state any additional constraints up front. So the works information under the NEC specifies and describes the works, the end state, but also states any constraints on how the contractor provides the works. Okay? So if there are additional constraints, or actually constraints which can be relaxed, yeah, because often constraints in the works information, well, okay, in general they're important, but they might not be quite important here, or if I go and talk with that stakeholder, we might be able to relax it, and you could be able to work weekends this weekend, yeah, that sort of thing. So, bit on what the contract actually says. So, 63.3 says the assessment of the effect of a compensation event includes risk allowances for costs and time for matters which have a significant chance of occurring and are at the contractor's risk under this contract, i.e. up to the point at which they become a compensation event if they become a compensation event. Right. So the contractor, in pricing up a compensation event, allows for the normal risks that they would at tender. Yeah. And then if one of those risks occurs on that compensation event activity, it's another compensation event. So if the employer has, for instance, deleted the physical conditions risk or the weather risk or whatever, then in principle, the contractor can allow extra risk in that quotation because they're taking all the weather risk. Yeah? Another one. If the project manager decides that effects of a compensation event are too uncertain to be forecast reasonably, we'd be guessing, yep. And if I'm guessing with about amounts of risk and assumptions, then we're basically going to have an argument when you put your quotation in. Yep. So let's avoid that argument by identifying assumptions straight up at the start when I ask for the quotation. And then the project manager states these assumptions in his instructions to the contractor to submit a quotation, assessments based upon them, and if any of them later prove to be wrong, then it's another compensation event in accordance with clause 60.117. So this is where the project manager can alter, for that compensation event, the risk allocation under the contract, and say, don't price for any weather risk, or don't price for any ground risk, or whatever. Yeah? But then if the ground risk does occur, that's an additional compensation event. Now notice this, the project manager has to state those assumptions. The number of times contractors have said, but look, in my quotation, I've clearly stated my assumptions and they've been proven to be wrong by real life. I want an extra compensation event. Well, okay, those are your assumptions in how you built up your quotation, but they're not project manager's assumptions. Okay, so if you're making those, state them, and if the project manager doesn't like them, well, hopefully you do it up front, but second time round that might mean modifying those, but otherwise, if it's just the contractor stating the assumptions, you can be hung by them, basically. Okay, so that's what the contract says. How's this work in practice? How do people evaluate risk? Well, depending on what book you read, risk management has various stages, but this is the basic one. People recognize that? Yeah, scope, context, whatever, identification, assessment, plan out the responses, and then actually doing the responses. Yeah. So what did people do in practice? Well, the first one was, let's have a standard percentage for risk, which is a bit like saying, I've identified construction is a risky business. Tick. Yeah. Well done. Right. And the result was no one ever agreed what that standard percentage should be. Not one of the 29 contracts which I looked at agreed what that standard percentage should be. Because it would depend on, going on to two, what the circumstances were. So we're building a building. Okay, we're outside and in the ground. Well, that's 10%. We were in a covered building, a couple of percent. Well, actually, what happened there was trying to have a percentage based on the nature of the work. They might have identified it. They might have done a bit of an assessment in terms of likelihood. But actually, they're still not really going, well, what can we do about those risks? Yeah. The result was that they rarely agreed what it was. In actual fact, it was the contractor's bet noir, where the contractor would say, here's my quotation for £1,000 plus a fee of 10%. The project manager would go, oh, well, I'm not sure about that. Get on and do the work as instructed, yeah, but we'll take records. Oh, it's coming at £800 plus fee, so 880. I'll have the 880. Contractor goes, oh, you know, I did it more efficiently. I've lost a bit of profit. Grumble. What they really hated was, oh, £1,000 plus 10% fee percentage. Oh, not sure about that. Get on and do the work. Oh, it's coming at £1,200 plus fee percentage. Suddenly the project manager finds the forecast attractive. Yeah. And the contractor's going, well, I'm actually losing money now. So if it's consistently done, the contractor breaks even, shall we say, in compensation events, or loses money, and then they just stop doing it. They just say, it's all going to be records. Wherever possible, I'm not going to do anything. It's all going to be records, and you lose the benefits. So what did they do on sites where it worked? Well, I'm not going to go through. I'll give an example. So let's say I want to, which one should I do? Let's say, real life example, sewage treatment works. Big settlement tank, 5 meters deep. They went, for some reason, they just got on site and it needed shifting around 90 degrees. They had no site information, ground condition information on that location. So they said, well, what can we do to get some information? So they said, well, we're just on site, we've got a back actor. The very least we can do is do a couple of trial pits and see if it's the same. Okay, paid for as a compensation rent, it was extra work. Yeah, price for this compensation on the basis you'll find similar ground conditions as per over there. Okay, now take that a little bit further. Let's say there was rock at -3 meters. So below minus in the original. So below -3 meters, the contractor would have had to use a pecker to peck out the rock and then a back actor to move it. So, okay, price on the basis that you'll find rock, the assumption is you'll find rock at -3 meters. If the contractor found rock at less than -3 meters, as in lower down, they could move more without having to double handle. The first quotation would have put the prices up. Yeah. But actually, when we did it, the project manager stated an assumption, assume rock at -3 meters. You've actually found better conditions, so now the assumption reduces the prices back down. Or alternatively, it could be actually we found rock at -2 meters. Actually, it's worse conditions than we found expected. So that's a compensation event on a compensation event to put it up. Now, being contractors, you might say, oh, right, they've said -3 meters. I found rock at -2.9 meters. I want an extra 10 centimeters of pecking it out, yeah? So what you then start doing is going, well, actually, okay, let's use some engineering judgment assume rock at minus 3 metres, plus or minus 0.25 metres. Whatever is a sensible engineering judgment, so that you're not constantly revisiting the compensation event, but equally there's not too much risk, okay, in it. Give another example. I want you to dig out a new base for a bridge or something like that. We know there's groundwater around about the base level. Do we hire a pump in? Or what's the risk? Groundwater. Or do we hire a pump in? Well, first thing, is this on the critical path? Because actually, if it's on the critical path and we haven't hired a pump in, then, and we find groundwater and it's a day's delay at $5,000 a day or whatever it is, the cost of hiring a pump in pales into insignificance. So rather than we can say, right, let's identify the risk, groundwater. Right, what can we do about it? Get a pump in. Well, actually, now that's not priced on the basis that you will find it. Get a pump in. That's not priced as a risk now. That's we're paying for the pump to get in. On the other hand, you could say, well, it's not on the critical path. And actually, you could find something else for that back actor to do pretty quickly. Yeah, looking at the program. Yes. Well, okay, I need to allow something for a bit of delay and disruption, you know, stopping work and going off and doing something while another pump, you get a pump in. £20 or something like that, but we're not going to have a major argument about it. And you could then go, actually, is it worthwhile hiring a pump or not? And if it's not, do we actually transfer that risk to the contractor? But you're having a sensible discussion around risk, and therefore you're starting to manage it better. Yeah, just by the nature of having it. Now, I've used groundwater, but it could be at the start, you go, okay, we've agreed this is a compensation. We've defined what you want instead. What are our top five risks? Let's just generate our top five risks. And probably by the time you start getting to the fifth one, you're going to be going, you know, 20 quid or something. But the first two or three, you might actually consider properly what you're going to do about it. Okay? So that's the sort of, you know, the process. Think about what can be done to avoid it. Roughly the premium that the employer would pay if they're not going to pay for something concrete is impact times likelihood. I did a webinar called Risk Management is Dead, Long Live the Management of Risk. And one of the reasons for that is that human beings are absolutely rubbish at guessing likelihood. So they are guesses unless you have a huge statistical database. Do we have those? Yeah. And projects are unique, so they're all different. And things change, technologies change, so the database is out of date. But anyway, that's another topic. And the project manager can also look at the risk premium and go, actually, if I was to plan transfer that to the contractor, is that value for money? Yes, no. Yeah. Actually, I might retain it. Might not. Does that, those examples bring that third bullet point alive? Yes, no? Yeah, okay. The other one is overcomplication. That's where a contractor complained that they were working these things out to the nth degree for things which might happen. They were at the project manager's staff, consultancy staff, paid on a day rate, were paid per day. They were arguing over if this risk was to occur, what would it cost to the penny? And then they're going, so what's the likelihood? 1 in 10? 1 in 5? Well, I'll call it 1 in 7.5, yeah? And it was just decreasing, law of diminishing returns, okay? So, project manager refines the risk by stating the assumption. If the risk is too high a premium, when the contractor submits, oh, I don't like that, they'll talk about it again. They'll agree something, the contractor has to go off and do the donkey work again. The project manager has to reevaluate it again. Is that good use of time? No. So agree it up front. Talk about it up front. Okay. And if the contractor is going off on his or her own, and actually, you know, starts making assumptions and going, well, what should I be saying here? What shall I allow for that, etc.? Pick up the phone, whatever it is. Get on the blower to the project manager and say, I'm making this assumption. Are you going to be happy with that? Or do we need to refine it? That's what I think I should do. But have the discussions as it's being prepared if the contractor is going off and doing the donkey work. Other ways of dealing with uncertainty. Break the compensation event down into bite-sized bits. So it's a design and build, a compensation event involving design and build. One compensation event for design. Once we've got the design, then we can give you an accurate price for the build. Yeah. There's a tunnelling project where they hit big flints. And when I'm talking about big flints, I'm talking big flints like that at a level which they weren't expected. So they went down another 5 metres and started the bore there. They didn't price the whole job on the basis that the contractor was going to find huge flints. They did it on a 100-metre basis. And when they seemed to be out of it, they started to go up to the original level. It was a drainage project, so it didn't matter. But bite-sized bits, OK? That can include leading out. If the contractor's having to buy a large bit of plant, as in plant and materials items which are going to be included in the final works, we won't be able to get that quotation in time within the 3 weeks. Well, all right, don't price for that. That's a separate quotation when you get that in, based on certainty. And the other thing is you can extend, by agreement, you can extend the timescales. Yeah, all sensible things within the contract to actually have sensible quotations rather than guesses. This was a shock to some people. The project manager can have have input as is paying, but also the contractor, this was a shock to the project managers 20 years ago, or some project managers, actually the contractor's got some expertise in this stuff. Why don't I use it? Yep. The contractors who paid for the project, the project manager who paid for the contractor's expertise in more complex compensation events said they got value for money. And as a contractor, actually, if I'm having to do lots of work which is outside my original scope, my original works information, I could actually argue that's extra work and I should get paid for it. Yeah? It's not just preparing the quotation, it's extra work to suss out what's got to do, extra management work to plan it, etc., and all that sort of stuff. And I say note there, on our options A and B, the contractor is not paid the cost for preparing quotations, but the literal interpretation of that, and I've seen lawyers who said this as well, is it's putting it together in an Excel spreadsheet. It is not doing the work to figure out how to do this additional work, etc. Once the change in method is agreed, then you can agree the change in resources. Okay, so assessing delay and disruption, one of the common problems is I've got one project in Dublin which is they've got 2,700 compensation events in 18 months. Yeah? Do you think agreeing the programming effects for every single compensation event would be kind of hard on that one? What they do is they basically have a standard assumption that not to assess delay and disruption in every compensation event, which is what the default the contract requires. Instead, they put in a standard wording something like this, and then at the end of the month, when the program is updated, they stand back and effectively do a wrap-up compensation event for a change in assumption. And they found that that is manageable. Yeah, a lot of people do it informally, but if you want to do it contractually, you can state that as an assumption. Yeah. And you've got the people there and a more up-to-date program. You're agreeing a week or so compared with months, etc. at the end. Just makes it workable rather than, in that instance, 100 compensation events a month. So assessing disruption, there's no magic formula. There was an academic who came up with a formula, but they trialed it on one and they said it didn't work. So, but all those things make doing it at the time much more clear-cut. So, delay costs related to extra time on site, but if you're in it, this is for the NEC geeks, if some of those delay costs are wrapped up in percentages, so don't pay twice if you're the employer. Put the costs to the change risk items, direct resources, disruption, and delay. If you've got a contract cost manual, start using it, or start when the quantity surveyors are twiddling their thumbs early on in the contract, they can spend their time putting that together. And every time you use a bit of kit or whatever, you put something in, you don't need to search around for the previous quotation 6 months ago or whatever. It's in the contract cost manual. Open book accounting option C and D, the target cost contracts. You've got open book access in any case. If they're worked out informally, the QSs can just do it in their rooms, you know, in the contractor's room. They can sit down on their pre-formatted Excel spreadsheet, work it up, etc., agree it bit by bit, yeah, and then go attach it to an email or a cloud-based system, send it over, and the employer's QS, the project manager's delegate, goes, yeah, well, that's what we've just agreed, isn't it? So I'll accept it. Does that take 5 weeks, the maximum timescales in the contract? No. Okay. In fact, it's done, now that's a bit of a simplification. You could say that's only the simple compensation, but actually I know £1 million compensations. This is from 20 years ago, so read £2 million compensations, which were agreed within a week. Okay, so it can be done. And communicate and iterate. I know that you're all enlightened sorts, and that if a contractor's quotation came into you, you would instantly, you wouldn't instantly go to the bottom and go, that's too much, right, where can I find, you know, knock money out. You'd work through it methodically. Oh yes, not, yeah. But basically, people do that. They go to the bottom line and then go, that's more than I expected, where can I knock money out? Well, actually, if the person have had input and influenced what's going to be doing, they know they're much more accepting of the final amount, but actually it will be less as well. Okay, so work it up bit by that process, and out pops the answer, simplistically. Yeah. Now, I did say, is that rocket science? No? Does very definitely take both parties to do it. Where both parties have done it, they've got the results. It does take competent people. It does take, and contractors are more willing to do this, but it requires, as one contractor said, the project manager to be able to take a bit of a punt. Yeah. Now, going back to that project in Dublin, with 2,700 compensation events, as the contractor said, some we're going to lose, some we're going to win on, but overall, yeah, unless we feel we're deliberately being screwed, if you like, you know, overall it'll work out, or yeah, on average. And likewise, the client said, you know, unless the contractor's screwing us, which we wouldn't allow them, overall it's going to work out all right. Okay, so that's it. Now, final review, I haven't got time. I would ask you to think about, if you are involved in assessing compensation, what can you take away from this? What can you take away and actually apply? Okay. And before I go, I'm going to give you a freebie. So first of all, we do have a stand. If you want to come to the stand and get a Golden Rules for Early Warnings fact mat, I have lots to give away, as well as pens and things like that. How many of you have a smart pen, a smartphone on you? Yeah? So there is the version of this which you can get. So this is our Reachback app. And basically, you can ask, we have 1,454 NEC question and answers there, which aren't on a searchable database. If you ask a question, we aim to get back to you within 24 hours and thereby acknowledge some NEC experts. So they've passed our quizzes, our advanced quizzes, they've written articles, etc., and so on. You can go online up there. If you're in on Wi-Fi, you can go to the Google Store or the Play Apple Store, type in Reachback, and you'll get an app, basically, which links in with that and talks with that. Okay, you have to go to the Google Store or the Apple Play Store. Don't just type in Reachback on Google, because there's a band called Reachback and they're on the front page. Yep. If you're doing that, it's Reachback Built Intelligence that will get to you. If you go to our website, you can get free, if I go back to the slides, you can get free, if you want training, from there, right. So, done that. You've got free NEC 3 in an hour, which is a free e-learning for an hour. Okay, you go to it, you you purchase it, but when you get to the checkout, it's for zero. You don't pay anything. Okay. There's lots of other freebies there as well, and so on. So that's me. Thank you. I'll be over, well, initially here, but over at my stand, which is number 39 as well. Thank you.